Council to order. If you all rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, City Clerk.
Councilmember Richards.
Here.
Councilmember Bennett.
Here.
Councilmember Aceves.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tempore Kasdan.
Here.
Mayor Perotti.
Here. Okay, at this time we'll have public forum. Anybody that wishes to speak to anything that's not on our agenda this afternoon?
We have no speaker slips.
Okay. Amendments or adjustments?
Madam Mayor, we do have an amendment to this afternoon's agenda that we would like to request.
Okay.
Staff is recommending that council add a brief closed session at the conclusion of the afternoon session. And there are two items that Mr. Jenkins will recite here that we would like council to consider.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Under Government Code Section 54954.2, which is in the Brown Act, the City Council is able to add an item to an agenda if the need to take action arose after the posting of the agenda and there's a need for immediate action. And so in this instance, as City Manager indicated, we'd like to ask the council by a vote of two-thirds of its members to add a closed session at the end of this afternoon session to discuss two items of litigation, both of which are pending, one of which is a lawsuit entitled Highway Recycling, Inc. versus City of Goleta, case number 17CV00568. And the basis for going into closed session on that case is that we received a ruling in favor of the city this morning denying the petition for writ of mandate, and that was just this morning. And so we just wanted to briefly talk with the council about that in closed session. And so that came to our attention after the posting of the agenda. And the second item has to do with a bankruptcy action filed by Venico in connection with its both offshore and onshore facilities, and some direction we'd like to request from the city in connection with that bankruptcy action.
Okay, great. Thank you. So,
you need a motion and a vote.
I so move.
Okay, and should we do a roll call vote, or is that needed?
No.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Okay, thank you for that. Okay, moving forward.
Item A1, proclamation declaring May 21st through 27, 2017 as National Public Works Week.
Okay, who is Rosemary Gaglione coming up and... somebody going, oh, Bob, I'm so sorry. Bob, would you like to come up and say a few words, and then I'll come up with a proclamation?
Okay. Try not to mess it up this year.
Well, it's my honor to present you with this proclamation. It's always a fun event when we do a Public Works Week, because not only are you recognized for your outstanding work in our community, but also you put on an event at the Camino Marketplace. And so you'll talk a little bit about that, because it's a great experience for people to come out and meet you, and also for the kids to play on some of the things that you bring out there. So anyway, let me read this to you. Okay, City of Goleta, proclamation. A proclamation of the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, declaring May 21st through the 27th, 2017, as Public Works Week in Goleta. Whereas National Public Works Week was established in 1960 by the American Public Works Association, and it is celebrated across North America to energize and educate the public on the importance of contributing of the public works to their daily lives, and whereas contribution of public works to their daily lives. Whereas National Public Works Week is a celebration of the tens of thousands of men and women in North America who provide and maintain the infrastructure and services collectively known as public works. And whereas the week seeks to enhance the prestige of the often unsung heroes of our society, the professionals who serve the public good every day with quiet dedication. Whereas the City of Goleta Public Works Street Division is responsible for maintaining the city's facilities, fleet and infrastructure, including sidewalks, pedestrian bridges, signage, traffic signals, city-owned buildings, storm drains, channel cleanup, street sweeping of the right-of-way, striping and markings, 86 miles of city streets. Busy. And whereas the City of Goleta Public Works Park and Open Spaces Division is responsible for maintaining 29 city parks and open spaces, totaling approximately 477 acres, as well as 36 landscape street medians, a roundabout, and 6,000 street trees within the city right-of-way. And whereas, as part of the Public Works Week celebration, the City of Goleta would like to recognize our own Public Works Department for their ongoing contribution to serve the public every day. Now, therefore, be it resolved that on the 16th day of May, the City Council of the City of Goleta does hereby proclaim the week of May 21st through May 27th, 2017, as Public Works Week in Goleta. And I call upon all residents, businesses, and civic organizations to acquaint themselves with the issues involved in providing our public works and to recognize and the contributions which public work officials make every day to our health, safety, comfort, and quality of life. I'd like to present this to you, and I think there's an opportunity for a photo.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. We really appreciate your recognition and proclamation every year for Public Works Week. It's an important event to all of us. We're going to celebrate with a little barbecue, I think. And also on next Thursday, we'll have the at the street fair at the marketplace. We'll have some of our equipment out there. We're going to do some pothole demonstrations, fixing them. And hopefully we'll get a lot of kids and people out there, kind of give them an idea of what we do. It's come to my attention before, it was said to me by a fellow public works worker at a different agency, that it's amazing that you can get on out of your driveway in San Diego and always take a road nonstop all the way over to Portland, Maine. It's amazing what we have as far as infrastructure throughout this country. And every one of them is taken care of by public works people. So before I thank my crew, I would like to recognize Rosemary Gaglione, our leader, for her leadership and for her support of the Public Works Maintenance Department, which has been fantastic. And, of course, recognize all the work that's done by our CIP department and our engineering department also, who are all part of the Public Works team. So having said that, I do want, again, to thank my crew. We're a little bit short right now, but we're still working very hard. We are doing a lot of the maintenance that used to be done by contract. I think we're doing it a lot faster. I think we're getting a lot better quality. And again, a lot of that in part, mostly in part, is due to the support we got from Rosemarie. So thank you for the proclamation, and thank you for the recognition.
Thank you. And I'll be out there next week with my grandchildren. Okay, City Clerk.
Item A2, Certificate of Recognition, Ashlyn Strawley, Club Director, Goleta Unit, United Boys and Girls Club of Santa Barbara County.
Okay, well, I have another honor here. Ashlyn, if you'd like to come up to the podium.
Sure. Thank you so much.
I am so sad you're leaving. You've just been so fabulous, and It's going to be hard to fill your shoes, but I do have a certificate of recognition on behalf of the City Council, acknowledging Ashlyn Strawley for her dedicated service as club director of the Goleta unit of the United Boys and Girls Club of Santa Barbara County. The City Council applauds Ms. Strawley for her commitment to inspire the children in the Goleta community with the confidence needed to be succeed in school and in life. You're a hero. Aww. Thank you. So here we go. I hope that, picture.
Yes, of course. No. Oops, let me get it straight. Do you get it?
I haven't cried in a long time, Ashlyn. Would you like to say a few words?
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
Well, I just I greatly appreciate this recognition, and it's been an absolute pleasure to work alongside and close with the council, along with the city staff. I do hope to return and continue serving the youth here in Goleta. It is a wonderful community, and I wouldn't have it any other way to come right back here and continue our work. So thank you for your continued support of the United Boys and Girls Clubs of Santa Barbara County, and in addition, support of myself as well. Thank you so much,
thank
Madam
you.
Mayor. Thank you.
Michael Baker, do you have anything you'd like to say? I've never known you to be at a loss of words.
I cried too. That's all I'm going to say.
That's
all I need to say. I cried as well. Hopefully, Ashlyn's going to be coming back. She'll be gone for 53 weeks. Not 53 weeks in one day, but 53 weeks. But she'll be back, and our goal is to get her back in the organization as quickly as possible. So, again, I want to thank you for all of your support. She's done a great job, and if I had a dozen Ashlands, I could take over the world without any question. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, I'd like to just say, if I could, just a couple of comments. You know, I've had the opportunity to see you work. In fact, we were just there this last week when Leadership Santa Barbara built your new benches, new picnic tables. But the way... those kids really love you, and they respect you. But you give that back to them. And what was that? Flat tire? She shouts out flat tire, and all of a sudden the kids go, shh, and it's totally quiet. That's something I think council can learn in the future. But I want to personally thank you. You've done a great job. That certificate comes with a contract in that you have to come back because the club's not going to be the same without you.
Thank
you for your service.
Yes. Go ahead, Councilman Bennett.
Yeah, I too would like to say thank you. I was privileged to be introduced. I think you were here just a day or two or a few days when you came to Goleta, and so we had an opportunity to talk, and you were educating me on your future plans and what your goals were, and I think you've far exceeded all of those from what I can tell, and very much enjoyed the program last week. I thought that was excellent. And then the game pieces that you unveiled in the gym were phenomenal. That the kids went berserk. I mean, that was something incredibly special. So it just goes to show that your ability to engage other members of our community and show their interest in supporting the Boys and Girls Club, those things wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for you out there doing that kind of outreach. So once again, it's recognized. We appreciate it very much. And I do personally hope to see you back here in 53 weeks. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
Item A3, Southern California Edison Circuit Reliability Presentation.
Good afternoon, Madam Mayor, members of the council. My name is Rondi Guthrie, Government Affairs Representative with Southern California Edison. And also here with us is Alicia Piatto, our district manager for Santa Barbara area. Certainly it's a tough act to follow there. Southern California Edison's very proud sponsors of our United Boys and Girls Clubs here. And Ashlyn and Michael have done a great job. So. We've been asked to come here today and give you an overview of our circuit reliability report. And this is a report we provide to all of our cities and counties throughout our service territory for the last several years that really shows you how the electrical system is performing in, here in your city. Just to back up, Southern California Edison is modernizing the power grid to meet the changing needs and expectations of our customers and to help California achieve its clean energy goals. We are investing more than $12 billion in our power grid between 2015 and 2017 with the goal of increasing power reliability through significant upgrades. You can see in your report a list of, you know, the upgrades we're doing throughout our service territory, and Alicia will actually whittle that down to what we're doing here in your community. Then just a little on understanding your reliability report. We do give this presentation to your city management every year, and then they ask us to come and present it to you. I know we have a few new council members. So how we decide, you know, what circuits we need to work on throughout our service territory is really in these metrics before you. We look at what we call SAIDI, and the key there is the D, duration, the duration of outages, and SAIFI, and the key there is the F, the frequency of outages. And we look at that circuit by circuit, and that helps us decide what circuits we really need to work on to increase reliability. And I don't know if any of the public works staff is still here, but I did want to take a moment with all of this work we're doing here in your community to thank your city management and public works staff. We've had ongoing meetings with them to see how we can work together to really be as least impactful to the community as possible while we do our work and while you have work going on that you're doing as well. I think I'll go ahead and turn it over to Alicia, who can talk a little bit more about the reliability metrics and then specifically the reliability report and the work we're doing here in your city. And then we're open to questions, of course, as well.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Alicia Piotto. I'm the district manager here for the Santa Barbara office. We're located just down the street on David Love Place, so we're your neighbors. To back up what Rondi was talking about, we utilize reliability metrics. They're pretty system-wide. They're used by all utility companies. What we like to measure is three categories of service interruptions. These are all based on emergent outages. So we measure ourselves against the number of minutes that that our customers are interrupted. Those are called momentary, or we call it MAFI. The frequency of outages, so how many times our customers actually see an outage, and then the duration, so the number of minutes customers are experiencing outages. So that's what most of the metrics are based on. The district that I operate here is in charge of actually making sure that we're reliable in all of the Santa Barbara district cities. So that's Carpinteria, Goleta, Isla Vista, Mission Canyon, Montecito, Santa Barbara, Summerlin, and Toro Canyon, so big area. Next slide six, kind of compares how we're doing against the other districts at the Edison territory. We are noted as Santa Barbara. So back in 2012, we were ranked 9 in SAIDI and 13 in SAIFI. So unfortunately, the lower the number, the more action our circuits actually need. They're having more interruptions. So that was back in 2012. We kind of went up and kind of came back down, but in 2016, our SAIDI numbers are 10 and our SAIFI numbers are 8. So we continue to sort of be in that bandwidth. Specifically for Goleta, we maintain 13 different circuits. The circuits are labeled for you here on this slide, their name and the voltage, and then the sum of meters that we actually have on those circuits. So not necessarily customers, but the meters that we actually have attached to each of those. Next slide is really a little more history, depicting how Goleta itself is doing against system-wide. So system-wide, the SAIDI number, the average number of minutes, customers see outages is about 134 minutes. In Goleta, it was 133, just shy. So we're toe-to-toe with the system average. On SAIFI, we're doing much better. So the frequency of outages that they're seeing is much less than what the system-wide is for Edison.
And then the May fee, we're about 1.1, so one momentary outage per, on an average, is what customers feel from us. And again, that's a little bit better than the system average.
Excuse me, I have a question.
Yes.
System average, is that for the district or what? Which system?
System average is for all of the offices for Southern California.
Okay, all of them. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, the entire service territory. Okay, the next is a pie chart that gives you kind of a visual of how we performed in 2016. So in 2016, the majority of our outages that we had were due to equipment failure, 53.7%. Were due to equipment failure. The others, the other majority would have been a fire, earthquake, weather, any kind of weather-related goes in there, so that's 32%. Of the equipment failure, the majority were cable or conductor failure. So we really went into the data to see what really was it, and it was in our cable category. The next slide, slide 10, is the same information, only this time it's cut up by frequency. So of the customers that felt these outages, what was the cause? Again, we were sort of toe-to-toe with weather, but we had a high percentage, 40% of equipment failure, again, due to the cable and the wire failures. So slide 11, so you might want to say, well, where are all these circuits? This is a really little map, but if you go into our website, you can actually pull this map and make it bigger. But this is sort of overlays our circuits against the service territory, so you can kind of see where the circuits traverse in the area. There are 13 of them. And then probably the most important map to you is slide 12. Which actually shows the work that we have planned for 2017 in the Goleta area. We have quite a bit of equipment replacement, pole replacement, some circuit and safety projects, and they're all depicted here. So our target investment here is about $2.7 million this year, and that's just an infrastructure capital replacement. It doesn't include all the maintenance that we do, the general maintenance. Where are we going to be spending it? We're spending it on three circuits. We will be doing some reconductoring on what we call the WASP circuit. And the area that we're going to be targeting is along Pine, Thornwood, Kellogg. We're also going to be working on what we call the Gaucho, which is along Hollister and Kelly. Again, changing poles out and reconductoring. And the biggest portion of the project will be on a circuit called the Tecolote. And that one traverses around Vega Drive, Carl, Patterson, Calle Real, Cambridge, Camino, Campiano, and Cordono. So basically we're going to be all around that area, again, doing more cable and wire and poles and transformer replacements. So these are the jobs that we've got going on right now, and these are scheduled to be completed by the end of this year. Okay. Any questions? That's really what I got for you guys today.
Go ahead. Yes, is there a target where, you know, you cited 1.1, 1.3, you know, all that sort of thing. Is there a particular goal that you seek? Is there a level where it's unacceptable, where you want to make sure it's always going to be above that?
You mean as far as our SAIDI numbers? So right now,
and safety.
Yeah, so right now as a corporation, we are targeting improving our duration by 1 hour. So that is the corporate goal, is we're trying to become more reliable. And we think if we can just shave off at least an hour from all of our outages, we will thus improve the overall SAIDI numbers. Specifically for the district, we have monthly meetings where we actually review every outage that we have that goes over 24 hours. And we actually are looking at why are those outages going that long? Is it that our employees are not responding in time? And is there anything we could do out on that circuit to prevent another outage from occurring? So
one other thing, for a household, I can't imagine, you know, it's probably not as consequential,
yeah,
these little things, but some of the businesses, particularly the tech businesses, these events might be much more significant. Is there any kind of different, infrastructure or anything else that they receive that to provide more assurance?
Yeah, we have what we call preferred emergency gear for some of our more industrial, more commercial customers, where they actually are fed by two different circuits. So if we lose one circuit, we have automation that actually moves them right into another one. So we have types of, you know, preferred emergency gear that people can, you know, can work with us on. But we do have a few big companies that have that here. So,
Councilmember Seves?
Mm-hmm. On the chart with the which shows the outages, the equipment failures, does that include the planned, you know, when you work in the area and the power goes out, does that include when you're doing construction?
No, these Sadie Safety is only based on emergent outages.
Okay.
So our planned work is not reflected in these.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I've had the advantage of serving on the government advisory panel, so I get to get the updates.
But yeah.
One of the things I learned, and I'd like you to tell the public,
sure,
is that you have a website that you can go to, and if there's an outage in your home or your business,
absolutely,
you can go to the website and find out why and possible duration as to when it's going to come
absolutely,
up.
Absolutely.
Could you remind everybody of what that site is?
Yeah. Under SCE.com, you can go right into our outage. It's under the SCE.com outages. And we have a map there that actually shows where the outage is, how many people it's affecting, and sometimes it'll give you exact details on why we have an outage and what time we're planning on restoring power if it's planned. And even if it's emergency, we're required to keep that updated now. So we have that, and then you can also go online and actually register to be able to get some additional information. And there's also a phone app that you can download onto your phone. So we're trying to get with the times and give everybody a little bit more technology and real-time information.
It works really well. When
yeah.
my power goes out, I want to know how long it's going to be.
That's right.
And before I get to the app, normally the power's back on again.
So yeah.
Thank you.
We're really trying to get our folks out in the field to kind of adopt the culture that customers want real-time information right now, and they're the only ones that have that. So we'll get there. We're improving every day. So.
Mayor Pro Tem?
Just a curiosity. So for the SAFE, the average frequency, the 1.1, is that in what period of time, or what does that mean? You might have said so already. But.
Yeah, so the SAFE, so all of this data is based on 2016 information. So the SAFE is the average frequency of sustained interruptions. So how many did...
In what period of time?
In 2016.
So there was just one? I mean, this is a frequency between...
So this would have been the average frequency that customers felt. So this isn't the count of outages. This was the average frequency that our customers might have experienced.
Over what period of time? The year? I mean, in other words, there would be one frequency, 1.1 outage in the year?
1.1 outage in 2016, yes.
Okay, so just one, mm-hmm. it just occurred one
yeah.
time
yeah.
and...
Yeah, that's the average. So some may have felt three and some may have felt none, but,
right.
you know, there's an average. Any other information?
Thank you.
Questions? All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, were you going to come up? I thought maybe you had something more.
No, I left my pen up
oh,
here.
Okay. Well, thank you, Rondi. Thank you so much. Okay.
Item A4, Fairview Gardens presentation.
Good afternoon. My name is Lacey Baldivies, and I am the new executive director at Fairview Gardens, a local nonprofit educational farm. And I wanted to take the opportunity today to introduce myself to all of you, give you a little bit about my background, some of the progress that's been made at Fairview Gardens, and where we'd like to see it go in the future. So to introduce myself, I'm a biologist. I have a PhD in international and community nutrition. So for the past 9 years, I've been studying nutrition and agriculture across the globe, among different cultures and in places with different environmental challenges. What I found is that nutrition really starts in the ground. And I probably don't need to tell you all this, but the statistics show that over 66% of American adults are overweight or obese. And there's a similar trend happening in children, although it's not nearly as high as that. And so our mission at Fairview Gardens is to do everything we can to prevent that prevalence statistic from growing and hopefully to even reverse it if possible. So that's why I'm here. And I wanted to report also on the generous grant that Fairview Gardens received last year from the city of Goleta and what has been done with that. So first of all, we started an environmental program that we had to keep the fields fallow for the sake of the continued drought, severe drought in California. So we took most of the fields out of production, but instead we planted cover crops in those areas because cover crops rebuild the fertility in the soil that has been plowed and farmed for so many years. So it ensures that when we do have water and we are able to farm it, it will be healthy soil for growing those plants. It also protects our very valuable topsoil from erosion, from the wind or high volumes of rain that we receive this year. So ensuring that our growing medium is still in place. We also worked to change the face of our farmhouse. We have a historical landmark on our site that's over 100 years old, and we'd like to see that be an explorative place for children and families to come and learn about what it might have been like to live in a rural setting in the late 1800s. So we created a brand new garden that's outside, a lovely patio space for community gatherings, and we'd like to hold future community meetings there and small-scale events that support the farm. Lastly, we've been able to sustain our educational programs. We work with children from infancy and toddlers all the way up to young adults who are post-college graduates. And these pictures are just a few examples of those children and young adults interacting with their environment and with our space at Fairview Gardens. We're also very active partners with other groups in the community. Just to name a few, we work with Leave No Child Inside, which partners with Explore Ecology, the Natural History Museum, the Santa Barbara Botanical Garden, all to get these children outside, interacting with their environment and learning about ecology and biology and other environmental sciences. So our future direction at Fairview Gardens is, first of all, to create a local Goleta food shed using our farm stand, creating consistency that we can offer that healthy, sustainable food, not only for the children who are coming to our programs, but also for families who want to stop by. It's a really quick and easy stop for them and an easy access point. We also want to create a more park type of feel on our grounds. That's by creating more treadways and pathways for children and families to explore, see things like pollinator habitats and the different gardens that we offer. And lastly, we want to expand our educational programs. Back to the statistics I mentioned at the beginning of this presentation, it's really important that we reach as many children in Santa Barbara County as possible. It's important to us that our children and grandchildren and future generations have the opportunity to learn about their food system and make the choices that will impact their quality of life and their long-term health. And so with that, I just want to thank you for the support that we received in the past and hope that you'll continue to support Fairview Gardens in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Lacey. Myself and Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan and Councilmember Richards had the privilege of taking a tour yesterday. And I have to say, I hadn't been to the farm for a while, and I was very impressed with all the educational outreach that you're doing and all the programs, and it was just beautiful out there. So thank you.
I'm really
glad I went yesterday.
Thank you for coming.
Got a question.
Go ahead.
I have a question in regards to water. Is it that you were restricted from using the water that's accessible, or was the water too expensive?
Yes, it was more of a financial issue and also consideration for the community around us because the water was so limited. But it was in the best interest of the organization not to continue to spend so much money on the water.
And do you get the agricultural rate?
We're on a mixed meter, so we have both residential and agricultural.
And is the residential used for the actual irrigation of produce?
I don't know the answer to that, actually. I would have to look into that for you.
I would think for the house it makes sense, but I'm talking about the land.
Right. I'm not sure if it's how the meter is actually divided. I just know that we have both.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. I can find out and get back to you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, City Clerk.
Item B1, acceptance of the April 2017 check register. B2, acceptance of quarterly treasurer's report for the quarter ending March 31st, 2017. B3, amendment number 1 to the agreement for professional services with Rincon Consultants, Inc. for energy support services. B4, amendment number 2 to the agreement for professional services with JDL Mapping for mapping and geographic information system services.
Thank you. Council, wish to pull any items from the consent calendar?
Move approval.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it.
Item C1, fiscal year 2016-17, third quarter financial review.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Mayor, members of the City Council. I'm here today to present to you the fiscal year 2016-17 third quarter financial review. The general fund original budget as adopted stood at $24.7 million. It was then adjusted in total by $4.5 million, which included carryovers for project budgets, encumbrances related to committed contracts, and experience additional appropriations related to funds set aside in reserves for compensated leave, street maintenance, litigation defense, and unassigned fund balance. So now our current budget stands at $29.3 million at the end of the third quarter. This slide before you shows our general fund budget summarized in table form, displaying the original budget, revisions, and current budget, and now recommended revisions for the third quarter with an operating revenues budget total of $25.9 million and adjusted total expenditures budget of $29.27 million. These recommended revisions overall has a net change of a negative $479,760. The following recommended adjustments include decreasing operating revenues by $454,760 and increasing operating expenditures by $25,000. The increased operating expenditures by $25,000 is related to storm-related expenditures that is subject to reimbursement from FEMA. I will get into details on these adjustments in the next slides. This pie chart before you shows the city's total projected general fund revenues of $26.4 million, broken up by percentage size. TOT makes up 33% of the city's total revenue, with sales tax following behind at 25% and property tax at 23%. This next slide shows a visual comparison of the year-to-date actuals in comparison to the third quarter of last fiscal year. The orange bar represents the current year, with the blue bars representing fiscal year 2015-16. Now, the city's revenues continue to remain strong and are outpacing the actuals received of last year. It should be important to note, though, that the gap you see between the sales tax is primarily related to the triple flip, the triple flip's timing of payments that ended last fiscal year. Now, this triple flip was part of the 0.25% of sales tax that was taken away from the city recovered through a series of revenue swapping procedures. Now, these exchanges were referred to as the triple flip. Now, the city used to receive two semi-annual payments for property tax in lieu of sales tax that came in at mid-year and year-end. Now, the city just receives a portion of these sales tax in 12 monthly installments. So we're continuing to monitoring the sales tax revenue over time. So it's kind of hard to do a apples-to-apples comparison to last year in that particular revenue source.
Do you have a sense of how much of that difference? So basically what you're saying is you don't know how much of that difference is accounted for by the triple flip?
We have access to that information. We work with tax consultants and we can get that information. But from just looking at it, we're anticipating a slight increase in an actual comparison of actual sales tax I believe it was roughly around 3% in comparison to last year. So overall revenues are tracking higher than expected at 59% of total budget when compared to last year at 56%. This table basically summarizes our tax revenue budget. And I've highlighted before you, you can see the percent of budget versus the year-to-date percent in the prior year. So property tax continues to trend in line with prior year. The sales tax continues to trend higher than prior year at 55% of budget. Again, that difference in comparison to prior year is due to the triple flip. Also, sales tax only reflects 7 payments for the year. And so there's a little lag, you know, behind. So now that we're in the 9th month of the year, this only represents 7 months. Transient occupancy tax represents 8 months of payments through the end of February and is tracking higher than the original growth estimates of 3%. Franchise fees are tracking with the budgeted amounts and are consistent with prior year. Though as this report was being prepared, annual payments from electrical and gas franchise fees were received. The electric franchise fees came in below at 16% of original projections, and gas franchise fees also came in short of projections by 22%. Now, these revenues are based off gross receipts and is largely attributable to the usage, the changes in technology, and the historical low prices of natural gas prices. So in light of this information, staff is recommending an overall decrease of $88,000 in current fiscal year projections. I also want to point out that these adjustments have already been factored into the new budget cycle and were discussed at the last workshop.
Can I ask one real quick question? I forgot the answer to this. On the new hotels that are coming in, do we still split the property tax with the county?
We do not. Not on the new hotels.
On the new hotels, we get 100% of
the property tax. Yeah, we will be splitting the property tax. Yeah. TOT, we do not.
Right. TOT is ours, but the property tax we still share.
Yep. So moving on to the license and service charges. License and service charges overall are currently below the 75% target and are at 70% for the year on a budgetary basis. This is due to lower activity level of plan checks and developer deposit activity. When looking at the individual revenue sources, though, you'll see that there are certain categories that exceed the quarter mark or the 75% target we originally budgeted for. The top three are engineering fees, solid waste roll-off fees, and public works deposits earned. Public works deposit earned and engineering fees are related to private development projects that are currently active and continue to perform over what was projected. The solid waste roll-off fees are related to Marburg, and the city has higher than anticipated activity with roll-off services. Again, this slide provides an overview of all the line items that make up licenses and service charges. Highlighted before you are the revenue sources outperforming original projections, while the others remain on target. For the other revenues, they are tracking as expected and are currently trending below budget in comparison to those of last year. This is mostly due to the timing of revenues related to the successor agency administration reimbursement fees, where the city now collects admin fees one time at the end of the fiscal year instead of twice a year. Fines and penalties are trending lower in comparison to prior year. This is mostly due to the timing of payments and less activity related to fines. The County of Santa Barbara Sheriff's Office has also recently transitioned to utilizing a new vendor in processing tickets and collecting fines. Finance staff was notified that this has created an approximate 5-month backlog, further extending the timing of payments. So staff will continue to analyze this account, but will be making a recommendation to adjust the original projected amount for this current fiscal year. The reimbursement category is also experienced lower than anticipated activity, and now this is mostly due to CIP cost recovery or reimbursement activity. And this is for the use of using more contract services rather than having full-time employees in the Public Works Department. Transfers in other funds are revenues provided by other funds to offset costs in the general fund. The revenues to date represent CDBG staff time. Again, here's a summary of all the revenue sources that make up the other revenues categories. Fines and penalties, reimbursements, and transfers in and other funds are under budget and in comparison to prior year, and staff is making a recommendation on adjusting these items. So for the general fund revenue recommended adjustments, staff is recommending a decrease of $88,000 in total for the franchise fee tax, a net increase of $11,500 for licenses and service charges, and then a decrease of $120,000 for fines and penalties, and a decrease of $295,700 for reimbursements.
Just remind me, the with fines and penalties, that's where we've added traffic enforcement.
Correct.
And yep. Yet the fines and penalties there decreased. Is that because, is that mostly a timing related thing, that it's the any increase associated with the new hire is offset by the delays and so forth?
So yeah, part of this decrease is due to the timing of revenues being received, so that we were notified that there's that 5-month backlog, but also at the same time there is a little less than hire activity in issuing parking tickets. But what we found is when the full-time parking enforcement officer did start, that the activity level has started to increase again. But now since we have a backlog and we're not going to receive these payments in time to accrue it, we're recommending that this decrease be implemented to reflect, you know, the correct amount for budget.
Okay. Excuse me. Have we gotten assurances of when that backlog will be up to date, or do we have an estimate of like when that money will come?
I have not gotten an assurance on that, but I will follow up on that and see when we can actually expect them to be caught up.
And is this then a problem across the county, or is this affecting other municipalities?
I believe
as
this
well?
I believe anything the county of Santa Barbara. I believe it, since they're changing their vendor for their parking and ticketing revenue collections, I'm assuming that it's going to affect other agencies that utilize them.
The other thing that causes the number to not be where it's supposed to be is because we haven't acquired the parking control vehicle yet, and we have not created the time zones in Old Town that we had planned on. So once those are on board, we should see the numbers fluctuate.
Luke, do you have I can't remember when our traffic enforcement officer, what month did he start?
The end of December. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
This is a cash basis that we're accounting for it here, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So if we know the exact revenue, then we can technically accrue for it. But if we have something to support that number, yeah. And most of our accruals are done at year end. So moving on to the general fund revenues recommended adjustments here. So the total recommended recommendations result in an overall decrease of $454,760. Now, interestingly enough, this is somewhat offset by the increase in adjustments we had at mid-year for a total of $860,000. So at mid-year, we had increases in property tax, building activity-related revenue, and interest income. So net effect, it's about a $405,000 increase still if you were to look at it from a quarter, you know, mid-year comparison till now. I also want to highlight that right down there on the very bottom, transfers in other funds, there's a recommended revision of $37,440. Now that number represents a Prop 84 grant revenue source that we did not anticipate for. It was related to the San Jose Creek Capacity Improvement Project. Now since the general fund bore a portion of that project towards the end of the completion, that's going to basically be revenue transferred from that fund back to the general fund. General fund expenditures currently stand at $29.3 million. This pie chart displays out the total expenditures by percentages. We continue to strongly support public safety. which makes up the majority of our expenditures at 28% of our total budget, followed by public works at 22% and general government at 21%. This next slide shows the prior year comparison on a year-to-date actuals. The orange being prior year and the blue being current year, the city expenditures continue to track as expected and slightly higher in comparison to prior year. Overall expenditures on a budgetary basis are tracking as expected at 55% of the budget. Staff has evaluated all budget variances and is requesting one additional appropriation from unassigned fund balance, which we will get into in a few minutes. This next slide before you summarizes all general fund expenditures by department. You can see overall that we are trending as expected and in line with prior year on a budgetary basis. So for the general fund expenditures recommended adjustments, staff is recommending the following adjustments to public works with a $25,000 increase. Now, this $25,000 increase is related to the storm-related activity that took place recently, and all is subject to the FEMA reimbursement. There's also a budget adjustment being requested to the city manager's budget and support services for a $71,450 increase. This cost is related to the recruitment services for executive management, and this will be done through a transfer of savings from finance and current planning.
So, in other words, the salaries that would have been we would have had to pay for now are not being spent, and those are what is being transferred in essence to the city manager's office.
Correct.
Okay.
So this next slide kind of summarizes the entire general fund budget with the recommended revisions. You can see overall revenues are decreasing by $454,760 and our operating expenditures by $25,000.
Yeah, I have a question on this slide.
Yeah.
And I believe there's a perfectly logical explanation, but I would appreciate it if you could walk me and the public through this. That it strikes me that the revenues on both the current and the revised budget don't match the expenditures. In fact, they're less in both categories. And it would seem logical that we would expect our revenues and our expenditures to even out if our budget is balanced. And so I noticed that they don't. And again, I understand that there is an explanation, but I would appreciate hearing it again.
Okay, so what this represents, operating revenues is what revenues we received to date. The operating expenditures and capital expenditures reflect the carryovers and the encumbrances from the prior year. So what you're seeing basically, essentially, is you're not seeing the fund balance part of the budget here. Okay. And that's where the net change eats into is the carryovers in the fund balance and the encumbrance line items. And we'll actually get to that here in a second.
Okay.
And we'll see the impact this has. So you'll see that recommended revisions, that net change of $479,760, that actually reflects on our unassigned fund balance. So this next slide displays the city's projected ending fund balance with the recommended third quarter adjustments already factored in. So you can see right there that's been highlighted right before you, the unassigned fund balance. So this was kind of, the unassigned fund balance is kind of this cushion that allows for these adjustments to happen in revenues. So that how we anticipated, or we did not anticipate at the time until now, reducing the franchise fees and those other related revenues. So this eats into the unassigned fund balance. And so now our new projected unassigned fund balance at the end of fiscal year 16-17 is now $381,000.
And that fund balance, that target, that buffer is 5%. You try and maintain 5% of revenues or expenditures?
In the beginning, we try to preferably keep it 5%. The revenues, the unassigned fund balance has a buffer about 5% based on the expenditures. So, and then we can anticipate you know, if we have any drops in revenue, like we just recently discovered, this kind of absorbs that revenue loss. So if we were to recommend an adjustment below this amount, then we would have to look at all these other reserve categories or look at expenditures and make adjustments accordingly to balance out the budget. So moving on to the revenue neutrality agreement, the city currently allocates funding to the County of Santa Barbara for sales tax at 30% of the 1% revenues, and property tax is shared equally. The estimated total payment for this year is $5.6 million. The historical payments projected through this year totals $103.4 million. Again, this table then shows the historical contributions per the RNA to the county. So other funds, the staff reviewed all other funds and did a comparison of budget versus actuals for all funds. Any deficit fund balances you'll see in the attachments for any grant funds is due to the pending reimbursements that are currently in process. Gas tax funds, we to date received $432,000, and it's on target at 70% of the $612,000 budget that was adjusted at mid-year. What we did not do at mid-year was decrease the expenditure side of $99,236 to correct the appropriations. So staff at this time is also recommending that we do correct this appropriation so that way we can balance that fund. Capital Improvement Program. So there's a CIP summary that's attached to your packet as attachment 4. All projects were reviewed for adequate funds. And staff right at this time is recommending third quarter adjustments to CIP and other projects, which will be displayed on the following slides. Now, these adjustments are primarily related as cleanup items and additional appropriation that's needed to complete projects. It should be noted that any of the transfers are related to projects that have received their, I guess what we call an EOC?
NOC.
Yeah, notice of completions. Yeah. So anyways, additional details of these recommended changes can also be found in Exhibit A as part of the resolution as attached. So looking ahead for the fiscal year 17-18 and 18-19 budget process, we just had our first budget workshop on May 11th. We have three more budget workshops planned for CIP and library, May 24th, 25th, and 26th. That's a Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And the workshop discussion topics will include CIP and library, review of special funds, and support to other agencies. Any questions?
Question? You did such a great job. We have no questions.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm prepared to make a motion if we're ready to do
yes,
that.
Yes, I'm ready.
Adopt resolution number 17, next in order, entitled a resolution of the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, amending the city's operating and CIP budget fiscal year 2016-17.
I need a second.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you so much. Okay.
Item C2, approval of appointments to the Public Tree Advisory Commission. Mayor and members of the council, we are here today to consider approval of two appointments to the Public Tree Advisory Commission by Mayor Pro Tempore Kazan and Councilmember Richards. Mayor Pro Tempore Kazan has interviewed Ruby Rajbanshi to fill one vacant Public Tree Advisory Commission position and wishes to appoint Mrs. Rajbanshi to serve a term expiring January 2021. Councilmember Richards has interviewed Jessica Altstadt to fill one vacant Public Tree Advisory Commission position and wishes to appoint Ms. Altstadt to serve a term expiring January 2021. Each council member is required to appoint one member to the Public Tree Advisory Commission, and such appointment requires at least three affirmative votes by the council. Council is under no obligation to make an appointment for either vacancy, and Ms. Altstadt and Ms. Rajbanshi are available in the audience to answer any questions you may have.
Would you like to come up? Jessica, would you like to come up first, and then Ruby?
Hello, good afternoon.
Welcome.
I'm Jessica, or Jesse Altstadt, and I have lived in Old Town Goleta for over 20 years now. And I'm lucky to live on part of a street where there are a lot of really beautiful trees, and they actually really mitigate living in a crowded, noisy neighborhood. And so I feel like Goleta is very fortunate to have a lot of beautiful street trees, and I'm eager to do whatever I can to help preserve those. And I have some ideas for my neighborhood, so looking forward to working with everybody.
Thank you. Thank you for joining the team. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ruby?
Good afternoon. My name is Ruby Rajbanshi. There we go. I actually just moved to Goleta last July. I'm from New York, and I have an environmental background, and I'm an environmental engineer and a chemical engineer as well. So I'm a little bit familiar with trees and the benefits of trees and, you know, urban heat island effects and air pollution, et cetera. I'm excited to hopefully be considered for the tree commission. I have two young daughters, so having a nice environment where we live is very important to my family and I. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Well, I think somebody needs to make a motion.
Well, I'd just
okay,
like
sure.
to, if I could make a comment. So there were three candidates for these positions, and I spoke to all three of them. And I want to say it was a very difficult decision to make. We had three very qualified applicants for these positions. I think all of them had degrees, if not advanced degrees, in biology or a related field. And I felt like we were in a good position to make a decision that wouldn't be bad, no matter what. So I feel good about my selection in Jessica. Nice to meet you. We've never met. We've spoken on the phone. Ruby, hi. In that she has, again, degrees in ecology, biology. She's an educator in these areas. She's a longtime resident of Old Town Goleta, as she mentioned, since 1985. And she's also involved with the Audubon Society and the Sierra Club. And so I think these are great credentials, and I feel very good about nominating her for this position.
And also, I was amused that Ruby, who I recommended, has an amazing background of, with a lot of science background in chemical engineering and environmental engineering from big shot schools. And what I was particularly amused was that you led with your weakest, the thing. You started out by saying, okay, here's the problems with me. I've only arrived in Goleta for a short amount of time. So you started out by describing the worst parts or the least. But I think you'll be great, and Goleta's lucky to have both of you guys to work on tree issues. And likewise, we had spoken on the phone but not actually met, so it was nice to meet you.
Well, I just have to say I was very impressed with both your applications, and I thought, oh, wow, we have two really good candidates here. So thank you for coming and applying, and I'm looking for a motion to ratify.
So moved.
Okay.
I'll second that.
All right. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you both.
Thank you.
Okay, so we need to be, Mr. Jenkins, can you report us out into closed session?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. There being no public comments on the closed session agenda that we've added, then we can recess into the closed session to address those two items of litigation that I mentioned earlier in the meeting, the one pertaining to Highway Recycling and the other pertaining to the Venico bankruptcy. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Then we will recess until the evening session. Okay, I'd like to call this meeting to order of the Goleta City Council evening session. If you'll all rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready, begin.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, roll call.
Councilmember Richards?
Here.
Councilmember Bennett?
Here.
Councilmember Aceves?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tempore Kasdan?
Here.
Mayor Prodi?
Here. Okay, at this time we'll have a report from closed session. Mr. Jenkins?
Thank you, Mayor. Members of the City Council, I'd like to report that this afternoon, at the conclusion of this afternoon session, we recessed into a closed session to discuss two matters that had been added to the agenda, both matters of pending litigation, one matter pertaining to the highway recycling case and the other pertaining to the Venico bankruptcy. City Council met in closed session. There was no reportable action taken in closed session this afternoon. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, we'll have public forum. Anybody that wishes to speak to anything that's not on our agenda, we do have one speaker, George Velez.
Madam Mayor and council members, I'm here to speak briefly about the controversy about library funding. It is strange to be speaking about something that is right up there with schools, water, air. I think many of us grew up with libraries and took them for granted. And as you know, there's a controversy now about how much funding will go into or from the main system. I want to give kudos to, first of all, your two members of the library committee, Councilmember Bennett and Mayor Perotti. I know they've been working on this. We also, to Michelle Green, the city manager, and again, Mayor Perotti, who went to the county's advisory committee meeting and spoke very eloquently, holding up Goleta's end. I think that people watching may not realize that what's at stake is a possible cut in July of 25% of an already strained budget. I think people watching may not know that we already have curtailed hours. Monday morning, the library is closed. Monday night, it closes at 6. This is a resource that we have to all continue to support. This is going to come to a head, I believe, on the 22nd at a City Council, City of Santa Barbara Council budget meeting. I urge everybody watching, listening, to weigh in if at all possible. Some people don't realize how our libraries are used. Some are under the mistaken impression that the internet is the library and we don't need a physical library, and all they have to do is go visit a library and see how people are looking for jobs, how people are studying, how people are doing all manner of things, and how children are getting their start with children librarians and those kinds of programs. Also, want to thank the supervisors who we have two supervisors in Goleta. They're working on this as well. This is a crisis if we lose any funding at all. I urge everybody watching and listening to pay attention to this, to weigh in, to use their influence. Also, you all get credit for having funded $100,000 this year to the library. That's in addition to the fact that we maintain that building. Some of you, I think, approved a major expenditure of taxpayer money for a new roof, for sealing the parking lot. You already make a great effort. We all have to do more. I shouldn't be talking about this. This should really be, I don't have kids, but I'm very happy to pay taxes for schools because schools benefit all of us. And that's true of libraries too. So with that, I'm gonna sit down, but a big thank you to all of you.
Thank you. Amendments or adjustments?
Madam Mayor, we have no amendments or adjustments.
Item D1, district elections.
Is this you, Winnie Kai?
Yes, this okay. is me. Okay. Good evening, Mayor, council members. I'm here to present on the district elections item tonight. I'd like to start off tonight with a chronology, just a recap of the chronology of this item. So the first thing that happened was February 6, 2017, we received a notice of violation from residents Lindsay Rojas and Hector Mendez, alleging that our city's at-large elections are characterized by racial polarizing. And racial polarizing occurs when a protected class's preferred candidate is consistently defeated by the preferred candidate of voters who are not in the protected class. So under the California Voting Rights Act, when someone serves a notice of violation on the city must act towards move towards district elections within 45 days. And that district elections here would involve splitting our city into four districts and having the voters in each district vote for their candidate. So when the city received this notice, the city undertook great efforts to ascertain the merits of the notice. And this council held a meeting on March 7th to kind of receive public input as to the pros and cons of district elections and at-large elections. Fast forward about 10 days later, Ms. Rojas and Mr. Mendez sent a letter to the city proposing a different resolution of this issue. And city manager and I met with Ms. Rojas and some of her team who's here today. And we had a good discussion to really ascertain what the proposal was. And we brought back their proposal to this council March 21st, and that was the last time we spoke about this issue. Essentially, the settlement was to have the city implement district elections, not at its next elections, but in November of 2022, after the new census data would have come out. They also proposed creating a special commission to look at how to increase public engagement and participation in Goleta. And in exchange, they agreed that they would not initiate litigation against the city and would do so only if we didn't implement district elections in November 2022. At that public meeting, council directed staff to return with the appropriate agreements and resolutions to memorialize that proposed settlement. So tonight, I've brought forth in your packet, there's three different documents. There's a settlement agreement and two resolutions. First, I'll go over the settlement agreement. Essentially, that memorializes what I've just described, that we hold district elections in November 2022. We create a public engagement commission. And I'll go into the detail of that commission when I get to the resolution, creating that commission. And in exchange, the prospective plaintiffs, Ms. Rojas and Mr. Mendez, would agree not to file any lawsuit against the city unless district elections were not held in November 2022. And they also wanted a $30,000 reimbursement of costs to be included in the settlement agreement. They are allowed to ask for up to $30,000 in reimbursement of costs according to Elections Code 10010E. Basically, they have to provide documentation of their costs that they incurred. In this case, it would be demographer costs as well as attorney costs. And they have provided that information, and we have vetted that information and substantiated that. So the fiscal impact of this settlement agreement would be the $30,000 in reimbursement costs. Okay, so that's the first document. The second document is the resolution of intent to implement district elections in November 2022. So this is one of the prongs of the settlement agreement, is to adopt a resolution to do this, to implement the district elections. And what that would mean for the city is that we would, in 2021, after the census data comes out, we would embark on the process of drawing district maps. And that would involve us to solicit demography services to draw the district boundaries, hold public meetings, and also engage, have some other public engagement tools for the public to weigh in on how those lines should be drawn. And then the second resolution is to establish the Public Engagement Commission. this commission would consist of, well, let me actually go into what this commission would do first. It would explore, this was proposed in the prospective plaintiff settlement proposal, that this engagement commission would explore whether the city should become a charter city, explore whether council members should be paid greater compensation, and if so, how much, explore whether city council meetings should be held after 5 p.m., explore whether the mayor's term should be 4 years. Currently, it's at 2 years. Explore, that is the directly elected mayor that we're going to institute in the next election. Explore outreach efforts between now and November, now in 2022, to increase participation in government, and provide recommendation to council on how to determine district lines for future district elections. And you'll see in the resolution we've added a sort of a catch-all, and it is whatever council directs that commission to also explore other issues to delve into as well. So that commission would look into all of these goals and whatever else council adds onto their plate. And once it's done exploring all those goals, that commission could dissolve. But that decision will be brought to council before it actually dissolves. So as with the sort of the composition of the commission, it would be 5 members, 6 meetings per year, appointed by council majority vote after public interviews, very similar to how Parks and Rec is all the commissioners there are selected. Part of the prospective plaintiff's settlement proposal involves having 1 member be from the Goleta District Elections Committee, and that and they can have multiple candidates from that committee apply as well. And but you know, we just know that at least one member has to be from that committee. The commissioners would be paid $50 per meeting. They would be subject to the Brown Act. So the agendas will be released early, will be released according to the Brown Act 72 hours before a meeting. There will be staff reports, and it will be operated by staff from the city manager's office. Our community relations manager will probably hold some of the meetings. And the meetings will be recorded and televised. So the fiscal impact of this commission would be $2,000 for commissioner stipends per year, and $2,000 per year for meeting video recording services. So with that, staff recommends that council adopt the 2 resolutions, one of them to create transition from at-large to district-based elections in November 2022, and the resolution to create the Public Engagement Commission and approve the conditional settlement agreement and release.
Thank you. Great report. Council, questions? Nothing yet? Okay. Hearing none, then I'm going to go. We have some speakers. Oh, did you want to say something, Mayor Pro Tem?
Well, I guess I'm curious. Are the agenda, the list of activities that the Public Engagement Commission could raise, are they also able to on their own come up with other topics if those haven't been already identified by the city council, if they decide they want to, whatever it might be, you know, meet on Wednesdays and not Tuesdays? I'm not suggesting that, but is that so? Is it all so do they have their agenda, and any changes to that have to come from the city council?
I don't think so. I think they would operate like any commission that we have. So, you know, to the extent that as they're moving through some of these goals, they identify other issues to work on, they can certainly add that to their list of goals and have staff come back and report on certain issues. So they would be operated and treated like any other commission.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then I'm going to go to public comment. First speaker is Jaseba Zibi Sandovar. I'm sorry. You and I need to meet after, and you can help me pronounce your first name.
Well,
thank you.
My name is Jaseba Sandoval.
Okay.
And as you know, I was born and raised in Old Town Goleta. I know that Goleta is a developing city, and I strongly support community involvement efforts and stand in support of voting rights. The process identified to get all communities engaged in the best way to go is the best way to go. I now live in Carpinteria, and I'm a part of the Carpinteria District Elections Committee. I joined the committee because I believe in voting rights, but more so believe in the ability to create social changes that will allow for more voter participation in civil processes. I understand that district election voting structure are not systems that many communities understand or will get accustomed to, but this process will allow for a commission that will look to engage communities of all interests in order to develop more inclusive processes to the formation of district elections. I know that as city council members, you've done your due diligence and have worked hard to do the right thing for the city of Goleta. And I really appreciate that. I appreciate your time, and I thank you for developing this commission. It shows your ability to innovate alternatives that will allow for transparency and community-wide participation.
Thank you. Matthew Lowe.
Madam Mayor and council members, I am a community member here in Goleta, the south end of Goleta. I have been here for 5 years. My time here has been one as a student and then two as a community member. I left and I came back. I came back because I enjoyed the community, the people of the community. And so I'm here today not to talk about the specifics and the finances of things, but more as a moral argument. I'm sure you're aware of issues of voting rights going on in North Carolina. And so the deplorable acts going on there, they're quite significant and have impacted communities very directly. And moving to Santa Barbara, I don't think we want to follow in those footsteps. Those footsteps can lead down a very horrible path, and I think California has already set a path, and Goleta and Santa Barbara have led the way in what it looks like to lead a community that is for all folks and welcoming. And I appreciate the work that you have done personally in making that possible, and businesses flourishing and education being one of the top in the state and the country. So I am here to say that the Voting Rights Act of California needs to be implemented as soon as possible. I think 2022 is too far. 1968 is when the Voting Rights Act was passed. And since that time, we've had one Latino council member in the city of Goleta and Santa Barbara. And that doesn't speak for the voice of the community. That is around 30 to 35% of the population here. Santa Barbara is around 40. Santa Barbara has already done a commission similar to the one that you have proposed, and it is appreciated that that work is being done. So coming from the experience that Santa Barbara has already done, we can look at the success that has happened, and a similar lawsuit has taken place with multiple members in the Santa Barbara area. And so lessons can be learned and steps can be taken for more direct action. And I think that is important to take place as soon as possible. Impossible, I think 2022, again, is too far away. And so the moral conscience that I would like to raise is a spirit of a preferential option, an option for the voice that has been marginalized and the voice that hasn't been heard since the Voting Rights Act was passed. There's a majority community here that has yet to have their voice be heard in a widespread way. And I think that is necessary for Goleta to grow in the prosperous way and for it to step into its wholeness. And so I thank you for your effort in hearing this issue and taking time to address this and being open to seeking new ways to hear the voices of the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Jacqueline Enda.
Madam Mayor, Council, I appreciate the opportunity that you have taken in embarking in meeting with the District Elections Committee here in Goleta. I'm a part of Santa Barbara, and I'm one of the plaintiffs of the District Elections Committee lawsuit there, where it became very difficult for people to participate in public engagement when it came to not only developing maps, but even trying to put in a sense worth of knowledge into the process. And so I appreciate the fact that you guys have taken the time to reach out to the District Elections Committee here in Goleta. The amount of time that you've spent with correspondences and meeting and trying to discuss potential outcomes. What you have done here is really develop an innovative strategy to move our communities forward in a cohesive way. When you look at Santa Barbara within the county, Goleta and Santa Barbara are partners in everything because we do everything together. And so as we start looking at district elections throughout the county, it is greatly appreciated the fact that you've taken the time to develop the strategy to open it into community engagement and allow the commissions to grow. And of course that takes partnership. So we are invested in this and we will continue to be a partner with you. So as you start to develop and look at membership and try to grow that commission, we'll definitely be a part of that because it's not just the outcome of creating districts, it's getting people engaged so that the young people in this community can one day run an effective campaign and be sitting right where you are and representing all of their communities of interest. So I appreciate everything that you have done and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Lanny Eberstein.
Mayor Perotti, members of the council, thank you for your service to our community. And I'd also like to thank Ms. Green and also Ms. Kai for their work on this issue. I think that the proposal that's before you is a reasonable compromise between some of the original thinking on the issue and then input that was received from the community during the process. And I think that the Public Engagement Commission, with the opportunity to consider a number of issues that will benefit the city of Goleta, is something that's very important, and I think will make Goleta a better city, however those issues resolve themselves. And there's a number of ways that they can, but I'm sure there will be studies of other comparable cities and see what they do. So I think that's a very positive aspect. One of the early comments that was raised by members of the council was what effect does district elections have on voter turnout? And in the city of Santa Barbara, in the first and third districts in particular, which were the lower east side and lower west side districts, turnout increased from the mid to high 20s to the mid to high 30s in percentage of turnout. And some of the precincts on the east side actually had more than 40% turnout. And that's terrific in terms of, because that's what districts or elections are supposed to do. They're supposed to result in more participation by the community and more representation. And what was really interesting about the situation in the city of Santa Barbara was that the turnout on the first city council district on the east side actually exceeded the turnout and a percentage of the Mesa district. And to be sure, there was an active campaign in that first city council district, whereas there was an incumbent running on the Mesa district. But nonetheless, that's a big change in the city of Santa Barbara when there's a higher voter turnout on the lower east side than on the Mesa. But that's what happened in the first election. I'm confident that that's what will happen in the city of Goleta as well. I know that there are many reasons to support district elections. Historically, when the city of Goleta went through its elections and its various permutations. There was always a lot of support for district elections, and I think that there's strong support for bringing government closer to the people, allowing people to run for office who don't necessarily have the financial resources for a large citywide race. So for all these reasons, I think that the proposal that's before you is one that will benefit the city of Goleta. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. Jennifer Smith.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and fellow council members. My name is Jennifer Smith, and I'm here as a Goleta resident. And I wanted to express my support for both resolutions. And I think, first of all, as a practical matter, that this is the fiscally prudent choice for the city to make. Getting tied up in a fight, I know that there were some members of the community that were nervous about this proposal, had concerns, but fighting this or getting tied up in litigation is really expensive and time consuming, and I don't think it's the best use of the council's time and staff time. But really, more importantly, the underlying issues in terms of voting rights and representation are really important. And I think these two measures combined, address these important issues. And I think, there's been a lot of negotiation and discussion. And so I think this is the best outcome. And so I'm here to express my support for both resolutions. Thank you.
Thank you. Our last speaker is George Willis.
I just want to add a couple of points that haven't been made by other speakers. First and foremost, I want to thank Assistant City Attorney Kai and City Manager Michelle Green for a proposal that not only substantively makes sense, but is so clear and easy to understand, which you don't always get from lawyers. And that's been the mark of your work, and I really appreciate that very much. Second, just something to consider. I know that there's thoughts about the recommendations for five members, which makes some sense. After all, it follows what we do on the Planning Commission, for example. But I also know we all would like to have a representative group, which is impossible because we would want geographic representation, we would want age, education, business people, non-business people, old and young, and I could go on. You may want to consider, however, making it a little easier on yourselves and expand the group to seven rather than five. I'm not adamant about that. I'm offering that as a discussion topic if you're so inclined. I love the way that you're going to choose the members. I think that was a really good choice. The other thing, and I think you know this, but I think for anybody watching on TV, the participation seems to be linked to the idea of the district elections and election of council people. And in part it is, but in part, citizen participation, people should realize that there's lots of ways to participate besides serving on council. And in fact, if we look at the background of you five, I would bet that you've participated in government far more as non-council people than as council people. And that's sitting in the audience, making comments, being up here, serving on commissions and committees and other things. I hope that the commission looks at it just that way, very broadly, not just how do we get council people and people running for council or people even voting for council, but also participate in all the other ways. We all decry that the gallery here is usually empty, and we need some real innovative, creative ways. We need to look at best practices. Maybe y'all ought to serve a big bowl of M&Ms to get people to be on these things. I think the effort is worthwhile. The final recommendation I have is that although we're looking at 2022, there are things that can be recommended before then to increase participation in lots of different ways. One of the things you may want before then is you may want to have a consideration maybe on the coming ballot of is the two-year term for mayor appropriate and should that be revisited? And if you did want that on the 2018 ballot, for example, that's something you'd want considered earlier. I think you should ask for frequent reports from the committee and that they should develop short and long-term goals. And with that, I thank you.
Thank you. Okay, back to council. Councilmember Sevis?
I have a question to staff before we get into deliberations. The resolutions were agreed upon with the group and staff, is that correct?
Yes, I incorporated the proposed ramifications into the resolutions and we drafted those and sent them over to them and they were happy with them.
Okay. In particular, dealing with the commission, it's going to be created by resolution, and the resolution specifically delineates what their job will be. With that extra on which you mentioned, any other matters as directed by the city council. So in what form would that come to us, and would it be constantly presenting a new resolution, or is this caveat strong enough to just say we also add this without changing the resolution?
We don't have to change the resolution every time you add something to it. That's something that you guys can discuss and agree that we should direct that. Sometimes the way that you guys describe it, let's direct that to the Parks and Rec Commission to have them weigh in. So it would follow a very similar process. If something comes up in discussion and you guys decide that this is within the purview of the Public Engagement Commission, you can always have that directed to the commission to consider.
Okay. I guess to be more clear as far as how it's presented to us, it wouldn't come to us, let's say, in a council comment form where two of us, say, sent it over. It would come to us as a formal process where three of us would vote to send it over. Am I hearing that?
I don't know if it necessarily requires a vote. I think in the past we've just referred items to the other commissions, is that right?
Right. Typically those things come up in the context of a staff report where the entire council is involved in a discussion item. As Ms. Kai said, oftentimes as we're discussing a greater issue or a policy, then there is input to send something to a particular board or commission to follow up on. Certainly if there are items that the commission is dealing with and they make a recommendation, those things would come back to council in the form of a report and a presentation, and that would be another vehicle where you could give further direction on follow-up issues or next steps for the commission to look at.
Okay. And then my final question would be, the reason why we pushed it to 2022 was to take advantage of a new census.
Yes.
But isn't it every 10 years we'll be looking at new census?
Yes.
And so the district lines could change every 10 years if there's significant movement.
Yep.
Theoretically.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, I have a couple questions. I one of the speakers, Mr. Rellis, spoke about the possibility of seven members, and I have been thinking about that as well. Is there thought? I don't know what my fellow council members think. Seven seems like there would be more opportunity for diversity. If my fellow council members think five is the appropriate number, I'm fine with that too, but I thought I'd throw it out there and see what others thought about the number seven.
it's very lucky.
It is. I heard that.
No, I mean, I guess, you know, I mean, the pros and cons are, will we get an adequate supply of people to, if it's seven? Are there going to be enough interested people to participate? And it does strike me that the whole premise of this is to encourage participation. I, I'm inclined, originally I thought five would be better because it's a smaller, more concise group, but it seems that the whole premise, the whole basis of the commission is participation and more voices, more, you know, from different walks of life, from different parts of the city and so forth. There's just more, I support that idea. I didn't originally, but I think as I've thought about it more, so it behooves us to try and get more people to attend this, but the it's not that onerous, the amount of the workload. And there's so many different, you know, it'd be great to get people from UCSB, the political science department, who do research on this sort of thing. There's just a lot of different voices that would be helpful. Did you?
Councilmember Bennett?
Yeah, my only comment is based on the reality that I've sat in the seat, and it's been a struggle to fill our commissions and committees. That's just the reality. I recognize it's based on outreach, and I support that. I don't have any problem with that. I don't have any problem with seven people. I'm just thinking it's going to be difficult to fill seven people just based on our own personal experience, and it's been a real challenge. And the clerk's office certainly works very hard and does a tremendous amount of outreach to try to encourage people. Our government affairs officer does the same, and using all the social media and what have you to encourage people to participate. So it just makes it a bit of a challenge. And I'm not, again, opposed to anything as far as seven, five, that's fine. And we can certainly work at it. I'm just suggesting it may be difficult to get there. So just something to think about in the course of things. One of the things that I'm looking at here, and maybe I should have asked it as a question to staff, it would seem to me, as long as we meet the tenets that are here that are agreed upon, if we wanted to expand it at a later date, if we wanted to, we got interest, more interest than we anticipated, and we wanted to come back and say, well, we think now we want to expand it to seven because we've got it. I think that's fabulous. Anything else that's in here as well that expands the intent of what is being proposed, I'm of the feeling there's nothing that prohibits us from doing that. Is that correct?
Yes, you're correct. There's nothing to prohibit you from changing it to seven or expanding the goals or changing this resolution.
Okay, so I feel reasonably comfortable that we can make a difference at the end of the day, and I think the suggestion is very valid, but I'd like to pursue it on the five to start with, and if we get the candidates, fabulous, then we can come back and say, let's do seven and go from there, and I don't have a problem with that.
Councilmember Richards?
I guess alternately, I would say, you know, I first of all, I understand the challenge in getting seven, and I know that that's an issue that we face with all of our boards and commissions is, you know, participation and getting interested people involved. I would offer a counter argument to what you said is that, well, what if we had it at five, but we had seven people that were interested, then we would be turning two people away that would otherwise be interested in serving on a commission that we now don't have room for, and what would be the harm of having seven spaces but only five people apply, then we just have two vacancies. So I mean, what would be the worst that would happen at that point is that we just would, you know, continue to have a vacancy there but and have an opportunity for someone to be involved if they wanted to. So I mean, I think that provides an argument for allowing for seven if we could find seven.
Mr. Jenkins, do you have something to say?
I would just note that if you have a body with seven members but only five actually in their seats, then you have potential quorum issues because your quorum is going to be four. So that would be the downside.
I see. Okay.
You know, I would, given our city's history, I think five is appropriate. The Design Review Board is different by resolution because we look at specific roles or expertises, if you will, to serve on that commission. And this one here, we got five citizens. And I don't know that we should say they should be young, old, or whatever they come in. I think we find the 5 best qualified and get the process started. And I don't agree with going to 7. I don't agree with having vacancies. If you're going to go to 7, then you fill the 7 seats. But I think this is a negotiated agreement at 5, and I have no problem with it, 5, as long as we know in the future if there seems to need to add 2 people, we can do that. But let's just get the job started.
Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan?
So I wanted, so as I understand, if we went to, if we advertised 7 and we only got 5, we could have a resolution to change that, the composition to 5 members, and vice versa, as Council Member Bennett indicated, that our resolution can change that total. Does it, I guess this is for council really, does it, is there one direction or another that is preferable? So is it, it doesn't matter if we say we're going to start at 7 and if we don't get a good participation of residents, we'll change it to 5, as opposed to we start at 5 and then change it and say, oh, we're going to move it to 5. We could do either, and it's 6 of one, half dozen of the other?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I have one more. We'll have to decide on which way we're going to go with that. I still think 7 is the good number, but I'm, like I said, if the 3 council members want 5, then that's fine with me as well. I think it's just really important that we get this commission going. I hope that we don't, I see no need to wait. I mean, there's a, you know, we're talking about some important topics that are going to take some time to discuss. So I personally would like to see this commission get formed pretty quickly, become a commission quickly, and then maybe after 6 months, have them come in, somebody come from the group and make a report, and how are you doing? Maybe recommendations. What do you need? I think, you know, improvements. I think that would be really important. That's where I'm coming from. Councilmember Bennett?
Yeah, I would concur. As soon as possible, I think makes all the most sense. The issue of charter is something that most communities work on for a number of years before they come to conclusions. So I don't think that that's something that can be rushed or is speedy in the very nature of it, especially if you look to other communities that have become charter cities in the more recent past. So that's just something to think about. So I think that timing is important, and I think the census in 2021 is very important as well. We're going to have a very accurate count of who is in fact in our community. Almost all the building that's been proposed is will be complete. I expect all of it probably will be complete, so everyone will be in a location that we would expect them to be, and I don't see anything on the horizon that's going to change any of that. And so I think there's some real justification for what's been worked out, and I'm very pleased with staff and with the committee members that have worked together to come forward with this. I think it is a compromise, and I think it's a positive one. I would just say for the record, I was listening to Matthew, who spoke, second gentleman that spoke, and I just wanted to, because those viewing in the audience and at home, he made some reference to the Voting Rights Act. He was speaking to the Federal Voting Rights Act, and he was correct. It was passed, as he said, I believe it was 1968. That's not the State Act, which was passed, I think, in 04 or thereabouts, and I could be wrong about that. But in any case, the city's only been incorporated for 15 years. It was incorporated February 1st of 2002. So I would like to just add that I'm very proud of the fact that I was a proponent for the first 3 efforts in 87, 90, and 93, and each of those had the component for district elections. And each time, and I noticed one of our audience members is smiling from ear to ear on this one, it was overwhelmingly approved in each of the 3 cases for district elections. So it's not a new concept. It's not a foreign concept, and this community has voted overwhelmingly for it in the past. And so as I say, I'm proud of the fact that I was a proponent on each of those proposals that included that option for our community. So I'd like to get on with it. Unless we have more discussion to go, I'm ready to make a
a motion.
I do have the comment I wanted to make based on what that one gentleman said also. And I don't understand how, first of all, I don't understand why we should wait 5 years to implement it. If the problem is identified now, it should be addressed now. And I don't know how much time it's going to take us to get it done to for 2018. It seems Santa Maria got theirs done quickly. And waiting for 2022 to see a new census, and they're going to change every 10 years, but if we can get on base by 2018, it'll give us 4 years running start to see what 2022 looks like and see where changes need to be done. The things that are being charged, whether the city should become a charter city, well, staff's already been asked to look into that. And that's really a staff-driven process to see what the legal process is to becoming a charter city and how to present it. The second issue of exploring whether a council member should be paid a greater compensation, and if so, how much, we've already moved ahead with that and asked staff to look at that and look and see what the other communities of our size and locales, what they pay their council members, and then come back with a recommendation for, and this has to be a vote of the people, so it would be on the, we're hoping to get it on the 2018 ballot, so that would get done. Explore whether the city council meeting should be held after 5. Well, we have, since cityhood, we've had our second meeting at 6 o'clock. So we've been doing it since cityhood. And the second question is, the other question is whether or not the mayor's term should be 4 years. Well, the last vote of the people, they were presented that option, 2 or 4. Elect a mayor or not elect a mayor. So they decided to elect a mayor with a 2-year term. That's already been asked and answered by the ballot really recently. So, you know, if this is a negotiated settlement, if the complainants are good with waiting 5 years, you know, I'm not gonna vote it down, vote for it. But I truly think that there's no reason why we couldn't do it in 2018 and give us 4 years before the next census. That's just my opinion.
Thank you. Okay, we're ready to make a resolution. Might we, maybe I need to ask legal, maybe approve the conditional settlement agreement and release? At that point, would we, or would it be the resolution for public engagement where we would decide on whether it would be 5 members or 7 members? Which, where would we insert that? And might we try that first and see where it goes and then?
Yeah, you can take that resolution by itself and amend section 8 of the resolution to establish a public engagement commission if there is the desire to amend.
I see it to 7. Okay.
Let me ask a question on that. Since this was a negotiated settlement, shouldn't we talk to the complainants and see if they're okay with 7 instead of 5?
Well, Ms. Inda is nodding.
Jacqueline, would you like to come up and speak to it? I think that's a good idea.
Thank you for the opportunity. We could definitely look at the possibility of saying 5 to 7, as long as it's an odd number, and then that would capture both of what you're trying to establish. Yes, definitely with community engagement, you can have more participation. That's something that we intend to help you in that process with. So identifying 7 may not be too difficult. And so if you have a resolution that says 5 to 7 with an odd number, then you have met what you are attempting to do so now.
I think what we're hearing, it has to be 5 or 7.
I think it, you have the opportunity to do 5 to 7, correct?
No, because we'd have 2 seats that may sit vacant, and we're running just as our councils as stated. So the question before us tonight is, do we do 5 or do we 7? It's one or the other.
And the answer to that is engagement. So 7 is definitely the opportunity that you have to be able to meet that. And with community participation, we will help in that process as well.
Thank you. Okay, so would somebody like to start making motions?
Sure.
Okay, you're ready. Councilmember Bennett.
Staff recommendation A, adopt resolution number 17 next in order, entitled a resolution of the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, declaring its intention to transition from at-large to district-based elections in November 2022, pursuant to Elections Code Section 10010, Attachment 1. And I can continue, if you like, with the, or we can leave B off and I'll go to C.
Yeah, let's do B by itself and okay. See where everybody's
and, at. And staff recommendation C, approve a conditional settlement agreement and release attachment 3.
You need a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, any more discussion? Okay, we're voting on A and C. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. That ayes have it. Would you like to, does somebody else want to do B or do you want to do B?
Yeah, if I know what direction we're going.
Well, I'm doing 7.
I want to just add because I'm still feeling rather ambivalent about this. I put out the the suggestion that we could leave 2 seats empty. I was corrected, and I now see why that would not be a good idea. So I'm good with that. I guess my concern would just be that I know that we do have an issue recruiting people. But given that this is the Resident Engagement Commission, I would be hopeful that there'd be support and energy behind that to get those seats filled, because I don't think it would look good for anybody if we had a Resident Engagement Commission with empty seats on it. So I'm hopeful that the initiators of this proposal will do everything in their power to help us to fill those seats, and that we will do everything in our power to fill those seats. So I guess given that, I am kind of swayed to the 7. So I guess I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
I'm good with that.
Okay.
Okay, move the staff recommendation with an amendment. Adopt resolution number 17 next in order, entitled the resolution of the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, establishing and organizing the Public Engagement Commission to be consistent with 7 members.
A second. Okay, I have a first and a second. And any more discussion? Okay, I'll take the vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Ayes have it. There you go.
So, Mayor, I just want to indicate for the record here that Section 8 of the resolution would there be changed so that it reads 7 instead of 5. And then just make a clerical correction to the settlement agreement where it says 5 members. We'll change that to 7 as well.
Okay.
That's section. Okay. Well, I know it's in here. we will find it and make that change. And I assume that based on the comment from one of the prospective plaintiffs, that'll be okay with them as well.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Great.
If I could also, the budget would automatically reflect the 7 instead of the 5.
Good point. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. We'd have to amend the budget as well.
The fiscal impact would be $2,800 a year.
Okay, so we'll make a correction on that as well.
Luckily, we haven't approved the budget yet.
Okay. I think that's it. Thank you.
We're
great
good.
Report.
All right.
Very clear, and appreciate all the time that everybody spent on this. Thank you. Now get busy out there recruiting people. Okay. council comments. Oh, are you not ready? We'll start with Councilmember Seves.
Sure. Okay. Since we last met on the 2nd of May, on the 4th, we had our Finance and Audit Committee, and you saw some of the work today. I also had a LAFCO commission meeting, and one of the big discussions of that meeting was pending legislative a bill that's been proposed by Assemblymember Limon to authorize the Board of Supervisors to appoint one of their members to the Isla Vista Community Service District. It was a vote that we took unanimously to oppose the legislation since we found it as incompatible offices. So, but that's a modifying AB 2. On May 7th, I attended the Fireball, which is a fundraiser for the Firefighters Alliance. It was held at Dos Pueblos Ranch. If you remember, it rained a few days before, so they didn't know if it was going to rain that day, and so they wanted to do it at the beach. So they ended up bringing in this huge structure, metal structure, where we had the party. They did quite well. I think they raised over $150,000 to buy a vehicle they're looking for. On the 10th, I went to the Visit Santa Barbara's annual luncheon to get an update as to how we're doing. The speaker was a mountain climber, and a professional mountain climber, and he showed a video of his work. I think it was Yosemite, where he was climbing, and I tell you, I got the heebie-jeebies just seeing the video. I don't know how they do it, but he did it, and got to the top. That afternoon on the 10th, we had the Tom Gehry Awards, where we recognize professionalism in law enforcement. We had quite a few. We had 20 awardees, and I believe 8 were for Valor, which is the highest award you can get. That was a great event. On the 11th, we had the State of the City, and then that afternoon, we went to, Councilman Bennett and I went to the ribbon cutting at the Boys and Girls Club. Leadership Santa Barbara Class 2017 collected, I'm guessing, I think it was $15,000, and they built new picnic tables, repainted their playground. It was really, really nicely done. And those of you who don't know about Leadership Santa Barbara, they select, each class selects a project, and it's a competitive process to be selected to have your project awarded, and Ashland actually presented this one and was awarded the project, which was really, really nice. On the 13th, we had our fourth Beautify Goleta, and I spent the whole day with Everett. We had 3 roll-offs from 2 separate spots. This is our fourth effort. We're going to do our fifth in Old Town. And then after that, I understand staff will be finding a place somewhere else in the city. So we don't get a vote on that. That's a staff-driven decision. But that was a lot of work. It was really, I really had a great time. The residents were so appreciative. They couldn't believe that we were doing this for free. So anyway, another successful Beautify Goleta event. So those are my comments.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan.
So let's see. On the 4th, as Council Member Aceves indicated, we participated in the Finance and Audit Committee, and they, as indicated, the work was essentially displayed today during today's session. On the 8th, I met with Rose Cohn from the Habitat for Humanity, who they're working on new projects in Old Town to try and well, actually, it's open to all sorts of opportunities, as I gather. And on the 11th, it was the State of the City. I believe it was the 11th. On the 14th, I went to the League of Women Voters. They had a garden party. And on the 15th, myself, as indicated earlier, myself, Councilmember Richards, and the mayor met with folks from the Fairview Gardens, and we had a tour of Fairview Gardens. And that's about it. Thanks.
Councilmember Richards.
All right. Let's see. On May 3rd, I attended the UCSB Technology Management Program's New Venture Fair, and this is a fair of students in the technology management program who work in small groups that put together business model ideas, and they have a fair basically you can walk through, and they share their ideas and they talk about, you know, what their idea is and their how, you know, they propose to fund it and make money off of it. And so it's very innovative, a lot of great interesting things that were shared. I was actually there with a couple staff people from the city, Vito Adamidas and Jaime Valdez. So that was really interesting. They're going to narrow it down. There were a couple dozen, I think, groups that were involved, and they're going to narrow it down to six and then have a longer presentation for each of them. On May 6th, I participated in the city's Complete Streets workshop. We had a walking and biking tour of Old Town, and that was on a Saturday morning. Had two different groups, one that walked around and one that biked around, and collected more input from the participants about the issues that the Complete Streets is looking at. On May 7th, I spoke at an event hosted by the California Physicians Alliance, and this was in support of a single-payer health care for all for Californians. On May 9th, I attended the UCSB Economic Forecasts Project Economic Summit, which is held downtown at the Granada. There were some very interesting speakers there, including one, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank from Kansas, and a couple other very interesting speakers as well. And we learned a lot about how the economy of the Central Coast is doing in Santa Barbara County, a lot of great information, and they shared a very informative book that I have right here, and if anyone wants to look at it, there's lots of great tables in there about housing, employment data, all kinds of great information. On May 12th, I believe it was the 12th, we attended the State of the City, hosted by the Chamber of Commerce at the Bacara, and I believe all of us were at that event. On May 15th, I attended Santa Barbara City College event in honor of their first cohort of Promise students. And these are the students that are being funded. Basically, local area students are being supported by the Santa Barbara City College Foundation for their complete tuition and books and expenses. And so they're really excited about that and looking forward to great things from them. So this was just the end of their first year, so they haven't graduated yet, but within 1 year, we'll be starting to see our first cohort of graduating students through that program. On May 15th, as was mentioned, I participated in a tour of Fairview Gardens, learned a lot about the gardens, and I had to say my main experience with Fairview Gardens had been through their stand, where I would pick up a weekly a basket of vegetables, and I learned that they actually don't do that anymore, but they do so much more than that. And so I was really intrigued by learning about all the education that they do and all the creative education that they do in working with infants and toddlers and elementary school students. And earlier today, I participated in the Gersh Park Foundation board meeting, and of great interest to report from that is that they are very excited to announce that they finally have a long-term agreement with the Dos Pueblos Little League, which they've been looking at doing for many years now. So they've always had a year-to-year agreement with the Little League, and finally they have been able to work out a 10-year operating agreement. So that way it will be good for both the Little League as well as the park, because it will stabilize their relationship and their finances, so they'll be able to plan better for that. There's two things I would like to mention that haven't yet happened. They're both this coming Thursday. There's the Goleta Valley Community Center's Tech Center is opening That's on Thursday, May 18th at 4:30 at the Community Center. And also on Thursday, well, all of the month of May, and I reported this last time, is Cycle Mania. That's sponsored by the, is it Coast?
Traffic Solutions.
I'm sorry, yeah. Yeah, through SBCAG, the Traffic Solutions. And they have a number of different activities all month. I'll be participating in the UCSB Bike to Work Day, since I work at UCSB and I bike to work, so I'll be going right past there. So that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Bennett?
Oh, I'm sorry. I did have one more thing to report from the Energy Green Issues Standing Committee. I forgot to mention a report from that. So as is mentioned in the agenda, we met on May 8th, and we heard a presentation from the Community Environmental Council with a proposal to set a 100% fossil-free energy goal for the city. And the committee recommended that this be brought before the full council at a future meeting. So we'll be hearing more about that.
Thank you. Councilmember Bennett?
Well, beginning on Wednesday, May 3rd, I attended my Community Action Commission board meeting in Buellton, which starts at 6, so I was unable to attend the UCSB. Originally, I thought I was going to do that, but then I saw the conflict, so I wasn't able to get there. Moving on the fireball, I was also in attendance, along with Council Member Aceves at the Dos Pueblos Ranch. And as always, the fireball is a kind of a fun gathering of a lot of different people, and certainly people that can write big checks, and that's always exciting to see that happen when they're auctioning off various and sundry things, raising money. So that was pretty interesting. Attended the Ivy Safe Task Force meeting at the District Attorney's Office on Monday, May 8th at noontime, and also attended the next day the UCSB Economic Summit. It started around 7:30 and concluded at about 11:30. And as always, that Economic Summit was incredibly informative. It's been going on, I think, for about 10 years or thereabouts. I believe I've been going there for the last 10 years in any case. And it's always interesting, and the panel members are always fascinating. And for me, one of the most intriguing people was the last speaker, the inventor. And the inventor brought to our attention some tremendous things that have been accomplished, and looking at the future, what our community is going to be having an opportunity to experience is going to be awesome. So, and these are real things. These are things that are happening right now. So that was pretty special. On Wednesday, May 10th, I also attended the Visit Santa Barbara event. It's an annual event, and I'm going to that also for a long time. And it's always interesting and informative. They did pass on during some of the business information that in the case of TOT, although we go beyond that with our TOT, they said the new plus is flat. The state of California and other portions of the nation, and in certainly Southern California, they're beginning to experience a flat nature of TOT. And so it's one of the big issues that they're beginning to try to ramp up, even doing more than what they already do, and they do a lot. And they accomplish a lot, but at the same time, there's a bit of a level of concern. I also attended the Tom Gehry Awards at the Board of Supervisors Hearing Room on Wednesday, May the 10th at 4:30, and participated in the special council meeting on the budget on May the 11th, and I attended a press conference in Summerlin on Friday, May 12th, early in the morning, that was called by our local congressman in regards to infrastructure. And the fact that this is Public Works Week and there's a great effort to pursue this commonality. There's a lot of bipartisan support for infrastructure and capital programs in the country. So there's an air of optimism that something positive will come of this, and we'll ultimately have some benefits from that. Also attended the State of the City like everyone else did on Friday, May 12th. At 11:30 a.m., and also attended the Boys and Girls Club program, where a great deal of money was raised, and they did a really nice effort on the providing of the picnic tables and then repainting other tables and things that were necessary that needed some TLC. And probably the fun part for me was the unveiling of the special games that had been hidden in the gym and all covered up so no one knew what they were. We were all escorted into the gymnasium and sat down, and they then disclosed what was underneath the cover. The kids went crazy, and it was fabulous. So just a kudos off to the leadership of Santa Barbara. Real special effort on their part, and certainly made a huge difference in our community and for the kids that are in our community that are going to benefit from that. So that was, like I say, pretty special. And that concludes all of my activities between last council meeting and this council meeting. I, too, have some future things going on, but I'll report to those at the next council meeting.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to go quick here. Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan, did you mention that we finished up our grant funding review committee?
No,
oh, that was May 3rd. So those recommendations will be coming to full council shortly, I would assume. May 4th, I traveled to Long Beach. Where they had a symposium on business of local energy on May 5th, which was really very interesting. It was a full day of a lot of folks that have already implemented community choice energy. Morro Bay was there, Sonoma, San Mateo, Lancaster. Got a lot of really good information, and the good news is that because it's been implemented in a lot of counties and cities already, there's a lot of information, and we don't have to all rethink and reinvent the wheel if we choose to go that direction. And I believe the county will be coming out with their feasibility study end of this month, June, or
yes, I believe they'll be finishing it up this month and having a presentation to the Board of Supervisors in June at some point, with the intention of going to other cities, including Goleta, in July.
Great. Okay. Thank you. And then, as Councilmember Richards reported, May 8th was the Energy and Green Issues Committee, where we had a presentation on community choice energy. May 10th, I, along with myself and City Manager Michelle Green and Dana Grassi and several members of the public, went to the County Library Advisory Committee at Lake Kachuma, and several of members of the public spoke. I spoke, Ms. Green spoke on encouraging this advisory committee to recommend to the City of Santa Barbara. Actually, it was to the Board of Supervisors, but it was changed to the City of Santa Barbara to maintain status quo for the funding allocations, to leave it the way it has been, and until at least they have a consultant. The county's having a consultant come out and do a study on it. So we're hoping that they would leave it status quo for at least a year until the study comes out. And the advisory committee did change their recommendation, and that will be going to the the Santa Barbara City Council. Okay, I attended the C3H, the Central Coast Collaborative on Homelessness Policy Council, and I had staff put in each one of your inboxes, this report on housing placements. So it kind of shows you a snapshot of what the whole county has been doing with trying to find shelter homes for the homeless. So that's in your box. State of the City, May 12th. It was very well attended. It was a very nice event. I also attended the tour of the Fairview Gardens on the 15th and UCSB Economic Summit. And today was an MTD board meeting, and I have also placed in your box the MTD's newsletter, so it gives you some more information. And a quick announcement that May 31st is the State of the City at the Goleta Valley Community Center, 6 to 7. Is Is that the time?
6:30 to 7:30.
Yeah, it is 6:30 to 7:30.
Okay, 6:30 to 7:30. Mark your calendar. State of the City, free event, May 31st. That's all I have. Thank you. Ms. Green?
I just have a small handful of items. There will be two public meetings next week on improvements. The first meeting will be about improvements to Berkeley and Andamar Parks. The second meeting will be on Winchester 1 and Winchester 2 parks, and it's to get public input on play structures for those parks. And that'll be May 22nd and May 24th at the library from 6 to 7:30 p.m. And then next week, Public Works Week on the 25th from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m., our Public Works crews will be out at Camino Real Marketplace with displays of equipment and fun stuff for kids and the public to take a look at, ask questions, touch and feel things, and really get a sense of what our Public Works crews do out there. And then City Hall will be closed on May 29th in observance of Memorial Day. So that's all I had.
Thank you. Mr. Jenkins, do you have a report?
I do not have a report. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, well then, this meeting is adjourned.